Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
All right, welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you tonight?
I am, on a scale of one to good, I'm good. I am good. I am Axel Foley good.
Okay, I like it. Very smooth by you.
Absolutely.
I am excited, though, that we're talking about Beverly Hills Cop this week. And I want to thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's podcast. You can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, and YouTube. That will make sure you never miss an episode. And then, of course, make sure you check out JD's blog at backintimepod.com. JD, let's travel back to last week real quick and talk about our previous episode. So we released a summer blockbuster breakdown of all these different movies. What was your feedback on our summer blockbuster episode?
You know, I have to mention the fact that we missed one big summer movie, and we were sure called out on it, were we not?
We sure were.
I feel bad about it. That's what's so hard about doing a top list. You have to cut some fat out of it. Obviously, right. We didn't include Endgame because it's pre-summer. But, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood did not make our list of reviews. And apologies to those that were hoping that we would get to say a little bit of a who do what about it.
Yeah, and that is a movie that I'm actually really looking forward to. But, I mean, it's Tarantino. Can you consider that blockbuster?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I always think of him as like the king of the indies, but he gets like mass, you know, critics and audience to watch it. But I don't feel like he's getting like $100 million budget to make these though.
I mean the idea and the term of a blockbuster movie has changed for sure over the recent years, especially when you look at what Endgame has already set the bar for. But it will be a very successful movie. And it should have been included in our list. And I, you know, many sorries for it not being there.
We'll second that. And thank you guys for downloading that episode. It's gotten a ton of attention and a lot of retweets and likes. We appreciate all of that over at Back in Time Pod on Twitter and Instagram. So keep interacting with us. If there's something else you want us to cover, let us know. We've been getting some ideas lately that have been really good. We've got a bunch of interviews coming up. We've got 3 interviews in the next 2 weeks coming out on here. So really excited to share that stuff with you guys when it's ready. We're going to keep this a little bit shorter of an intro. Normally we'll jump into it, but we've actually already done a teaser. We did a top 5 Eddie Murphy episode. So let's keep this thing short and let's bring in our guest, JD. Fill our audience in tonight on who is joining us on the podcast tonight.
So yeah, tonight we've got a great guest. He joined us for the Home Alone episode back in December. Good friend of both mine and Kyle's. Known him for a long time. We have George Warren, and he's going to be the authority on everything Axel Foley for us tonight. He was... I'm talking too much. George, I know you're excited to be a part of this show. Come on in. The water is fine.
Feeling very good, feeling very excited, feeling very supple. Just changed my lotion, so I'm feeling real good. And I've been working on my Eddie Murphy laugh all day.
Oh, that's nice.
That's much better than ours.
Well done.
I've been working on that.
Yeah, I had too much donkey in mine.
The people at work thought I was a little crazy, but it's all good.
That's awesome, man. Did you have a chance to listen to our top 5 on Eddie Murphy?
Yeah, Oh yeah, I definitely listened to it. Very, very solid picks.
Okay.
It was hard. I think you did leave out one that I would have personally put in, which is Harlem Nights. Because for me, it was a big deal for me personally, because it was actually the first movie I've ever seen in movie theaters. And I was like 5 years old, and I begged my mom, you know, to take me. And she probably shouldn't have, but it was all good anyway. I turned out fine.
Okay, so you only had one disagreement. So which one would you take off the list, you think?
See, that was the hard one. Okay. Which one would I take off? Maybe Trading Places, maybe?
Okay.
Possibly. But he's got so many great movies. So, it's a coin flip pretty much.
Now, hey, do you have any first memories of Beverly Hills Cop? When did you first see this movie?
Oh, God. Yeah. When I first seen this movie, it was probably right after I saw Harlem Nights. I begged my mom to take me to Blockbuster, so I had to get like every single like Eddie Murphy movie I could get my hands on. So it was probably about 1989, maybe 1990.
Okay.
But the thing I did have a quick question about your top five list. Okay, it says Eddie Murphy movies, but do you consider Raw and Delirious? Because if you do, then you will have to change your list.
That's a very good point. Yeah, we're gonna bring up Raw and Delirious on the show here, because there's a little nod to it at one point. But I mean, technically it is a movie though, isn't it?
That's what I was saying.
Yeah. Yeah, we might have really messed up the list here. But yeah, I mean, Eddie Murphy, the stand-up comedian, nobody better at that time. Absolute top of the game. I would love to hear him on stage in 2019 and see what he could do now.
It would definitely be interesting to hear, for sure.
Yeah. I'm a little worried, though, because I remember watching the Robin Williams special that came out like a couple years before he passed, and it was not good. And I was like, this is awful.
I think most comedians struggle with sustainability after a while.
Yeah.
They get kind of, you know, they tell the same jokes after, and you get like, okay. And you can kind of, if you are a fan of them, you can kind of tell where they're going to go with their next joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, either way, I would like to see it. We'll see what happens. But let's jump into the movie, man. We got a lot to discuss here. So we start with some opening shots of downtown Detroit, Michigan, and then we meet Axel Foley for the first time. He's undercover, and he tells these guys that the Lucky Strike cigarettes are great for kids. And as soon as they give him the money, he gets hot and starts telling the guy that he short him on the $5,000 and he wants the other $3,000. And then as he's talking, we see a cop car pull up in the distance, and the cops say that they recognize Axel, but he's like, nah, man, I'm from Buffalo. And then the semi-truck just takes off with the cops chasing after him. And finally, the scene ends with this truck just crashing through everything in sight in this city. And then the cops tell Axel to freeze. And then that's when they realize, it's Foley. JD, what do you think of this opening scene?
It's a fantastic opening scene. It does a great job of establishing, one, Axel Foley and his just off-the-wall demeanor. And it paints the picture of where he's from with what Detroit is in 1984. And then it just throws him as an absolute fish out of water, which is going to be a reoccurring theme throughout this entire movie, by turning and flipping the script as he's an undercover cop. And we just get this like ridiculous montage of this truck just obliterating everything. Like, this truck is almost unstoppable. It's fantastic to watch it just barrel through vegetable trucks and taxi cabs and just everything and everyone in its path. I don't know, like, it's, and with the music and the score that's put to it, it's just like this happy, upbeat scene. But a lot of people and a lot of property damage do not make it out of this scene.
And then we got to talk about the lead actor here. So Eddie Murphy playing Axel Foley. Warren, what are your thoughts on Eddie Murphy in this role?
I think he really nails it. If you watched 48 Hours, he does almost his accent that he does from 48 Hours in this very first scene. where he, it's like a very typical, like, fast talking, slick talking Eddie Murphy. Wait, be like this, Jack. And it come out really quickly. And it's just, it's perfect for the Axel Foley character. And the music that they place in here is actually a very excellent choice. But the Pointer Sisters song that, you know, it really just kicks the movie off.
See, that's why Warren's here. He even knows who sings the song. There you go. That's good stuff. We get our first shot of Paul Reiser in a movie that we've covered. So I thought that was a nice little cameo here. And then he's given Axel grief in the precinct, but Axel's really not listening to him. And they go into the locker room area, and all of a sudden we hear the captain yell, "Is that fucking Foley in there?" And the captain tells him that he's not taking any more of his shit. And then the captain tells him that he got his ass chewed off today. And you can see, I ain't got much left. He wants to know where the heck he got a truck full of cigarettes anyway. And he gives Axel an ultimatum to clean up his stuff or he's going to be fired. And as he leaves, Axel says, "Hey, boss. Yeah, you know, Chief didn't chew off all your ass. You still got a little bit left." And the boss just leaves. JD, what do you think of this scene? I thought this was hilarious.
Wise talking, jive spitting. Eddie Murphy just is kind of like George said, he's just nails this role and he has it down to a T for what he needs to be as this sort of Detroit detective. And it's really kind of neat to see because he does an interesting thing where he's both overly confident, but at the same time, you can tell he gives a damn about his job and he does not want to get fired. Like, you feel bad for him, but you know he's masking his pain with comedy.
Yeah, that's a great point right there. And when I was watching this, the whole time, all I could think of is, man, Kevin Hart was a really big Eddie Murphy fan. Because I see a lot of that in his work now. Kind of the same thing, where he's really over the top, but then he can take it down and be super calm, super cool guy, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think most black comedians, you can kind of tell that they are heavily influenced by Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor, a lot of them. And you hear it in their voice and delivery, especially when they do like comedic actor type roles.
We cut to the apartment. Axel hears this noise upstairs, so he enters, and he's got his gun cocked and loaded, and he finds his buddy eating out of his fridge here. And we find out this friend has recently been in the big house. And then we cut to the bar where we find out his buddy's been working in Beverly Hills as some type of security guard. And we finally get a name, and his guy's name is Mikey. They get back from the apartment, and we see Mikey getting slapped around a little bit here. And then he's told to never show his face again. And then he gets popped twice in the back of the head. And no more Mikey. So outside, Axel is talking to his boss, and he's pissed about Rand getting assigned to this case, and he wants to take it over because it's his friend that's been killed. His boss calls his friend a hoodlum, and then he tells Axel that whoever did this isn't worried about his narrow ass anyway, because if they wanted to, they could have killed him upstairs. Axel tells him that he wants to take his vacation time now, and his boss grants it to him. George, we got a lot of setup here in the beginning of what's going to happen. What do you think of this scene?
It was the perfect setup to that you knew that if, once you see his friend get killed, that he's going to make his way to Beverly Hills. So it gave him a reason to be there. And I love, throughout the whole movie, I love his interactions with his boss. Because he's a very, it's a very like 1980s, like, like angry black captain. Like, damn, motherfucker, they whooping my ass out here. I'm surprised he didn't say motherfucker more often. I think that would have really brought it in for me a little bit more.
They needed Samuel L. for this role. He would have been perfect. So we cut to a shot of Axel driving on throughout Beverly Hills. We have a montage of all these different stores and landmarks and some really 80s hairstyles and clothing. Axel lets out the occasional laugh. George, lay it on us. So he pulls into a hotel and he's like, "Is this place expensive?" The bellboy's like, "Well, for Beverly Hills, it's not." And we go inside. Let's listen to our first clip here as Axel talks with the lady at the front desk.
"Thank you. Hi."
"Nervous, some people, huh?"
"May I help you?"
"Yes, you have a reservation for an Axel Foley?"
"Well, I see. I'm sorry, I don't seem to have that name.
Check Rolling Stone magazine's Axel Foley. That's what it is.
Okay. Okay. No Rolling Stone, no Axel Foley. I'm sorry, sir.
Oh, that's all right. You guys probably just made some kind of mistake with reservations. Why don't you just give me another room now, go up and go to sleep?
I'm sorry, sir, but there are no rooms available.
Don't you think I realize what's going on here, miss? Who do you think I am, huh? Don't you think I know that if I was some hot shot from out of town that pulled inside here and you guys made a reservation mistake, I'd be the first one to get a room and I'd be upstairs relaxing right now. But I'm not some hot shot from out of town. I'm a small reporter from Rolling Stone magazine that's in town to do an exclusive interview with Michael Jackson that's going to be picked up by every major magazine in the country. I was going to call the article, Michael Jackson is sitting on top of the world, but now I think I might as well just call it, Michael Jackson can sit on top of the world just as long as he doesn't sit in the Beverly Palm Hotel because there's no niggas allowed in there.
Excuse me, sir, it seems that we do have a last-minute cancellation. There is a room available. It's a suite, but I'll only charge you the single room rate.
Thank you. I'm sorry I got upset. It's probably from jet lag or something. I'm very tired.
I understand,
What's
sir.
The rate, anyway?
That'll be $235 a night, sir.
JD, what do you think of this scene?
Again, we have this reoccurring theme of fish out of water. We have Axel Foley rolling up in his... It's a Chevy Nova, if I'm not mistaken, but it's a POS. It's a piece of shit.
POS.
That's literally what's stamped on the back of it. And he's in this Beverly Hills hotel. He has no idea what to expect. He just thinks he's going to stroll on in and get a room. And it sort of harkens back to the previous scene where we had the role reversal between him and his friend Mikey, where the criminal breaks into the cop's apartment to sort of eat his food.
Yeah,
and then we get to see the criminal get whacked, and then we get to see Axel Foley sort of be like, okay, now I need to go into criminal mode to be the good cop to the friend criminal who was whacked by putting myself in this. Do you get what I'm getting at? It's like this whole dramatic irony of the situation that everything that happens in this movie is just so I think it's brilliant. I love it.
Great points. In this next scene, we have the nod to Delirious here, where two guys are walking down the street in jumpsuits, and then Axel just turns. He's like, ha, 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 ha. George, we got to talk about the stand-up special, though, man. How big was this for Eddie Murphy in his career?
Oh, I think if you were alive at the time and you didn't know it or you didn't hear it, you were just like, you didn't know anything. If you called yourself an Eddie Murphy fan, you had to have heard Delirious or Raw multiple times. I know when I first heard it, I knew, like, okay, this is different. This is like nothing I've ever really heard before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you're a younger listener and you're going, man, I didn't even know Eddie Murphy did stand up, go on to Netflix right now, type in Eddie Murphy, it's going to pop right up. You're welcome. You will laugh your ass off for a whole hour, guarantee you. It still holds up. Now, in the next scene, we have a cameo. Actually, not a cameo, but a small role here by an actor named Bronson Pinchot. Now, JD, I assume you're a fan of this guy, and I feel like he kind of steals the scene here. What do you think of this this surge as a fancy guy at the art store?
You mean from Perfect Strangers? Give him the proper introduction. And for what it's worth, Bronson Pinchot has a brother whose name is Justin Pinchot.
Yeah, I believe so.
No, and so their names are Justin and Bronson.
Justin Bronson.
A good friend and never listener of the show. So
there you go. That's cool. Now, do you agree? Do you feel like he kind of steals the scene here?
Oh, he does, and if I'm not mistaken, he does throughout the rest of the franchise as well. He comes back in a big way.
Yes, if we get to the sequels, which I can't imagine we're not going to, yes, we're going to cover that at some point, but let's keep rolling along. Axel's friend Jenny comes down to greet him. She says he's getting old, and he's like, fuck you. And then they go talk, and he tells her about Mikey, and he's got to kind of break the news to her. She gets pretty emotional here with the news. And he asks her about what job she helped him get when he was here. And then he gets a name of a guy named Victor Matland. So that's going to be important for the story. George, for you, like, what do you feel like this kind of sets up long term as far as like storyline goes?
I think this is the perfect setup because you can tell that something is going on between them, but you can't. You could also tell that she doesn't know what's going on, but she knows that there's something there.
Yeah.
Because she had no idea that he was dead. When he told her that story, she just loses it. So you could tell, like, it was a huge shock to her.
And then Axel's in the next scene here delivering flowers right to Victor. And he rushes into the room and starts asking questions about Mikey. Let's listen to a clip here.
I was after he got there, someone killed him.
Oh, my God. That's terrible.
It's fucked up. And what do you wish to know? He worked for you, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Good gracious. I'm really sorry to hear this. Would you like to sit down? Can I get you anything?
No, I'm all right.
Well, how on earth did this happen? Detroit is a very violent city, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
All right. Do hope the police have procured some intelligent leads.
Exactly what was it Mikey did for you here?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
My name is Foley.
Excuse me, Mr. Foley, if I appear a little rude, but this sounds like something for the authorities in Detroit. So, if you'll forgive me, I really must get back to work.
Look, all I want to know is what kind of...
Gentlemen, would you please show Mr. Foley to the door?
Hey, take it easy.
Yo, man, get the fuck off! Get off,
man!
Get off! Get the fuck off! Get off!
JD, what do you think of Axel in his interrogation skills and then ultimately just getting thrown right out the building?
It's almost like a Dirty Work scene to see Mitch Weaver thrown out of a building here for Axel Foley.
Wistful. Sorry.
In our archives.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I think in rewatching this movie now, it's been a good amount of years since I've last seen it, I sort of underestimated his detective abilities. And yeah. Axel Foley knows what he's doing. He knows how to ask the questions and how to disarm the person he's interrogating to sort of get him the information that he wants. Unfortunately, he goes a little too far and gets thrown through a glass window. And I think that's kind of like the apex of a day gone wrong. Nobody wants to get thrown through a plate glass window.
Yeah, definitely not. And I love that he gets arrested by the cops. He's like, I got thrown through a fucking window. What are you guys arresting me for? What's the charge? He's like, if you guys throw me from the car, am I going to get charged for jaywalking? Like, what is this? So on the ride to the precinct, Axel comments that this is the cleanest, nicest cop car he's ever seen. Nicer than my apartment. And then they arrive at this just giant police station. Looks like a mini castle. And inside, we meet Taggart and we meet Billy Rosewood. Taggart played by John Ashton and Rosewood by Judge Reinhold. George, what do you think of our two detectives here? What do you think of these guys?
I think they're just perfect as the kind of quintessential 80s detective. They look like somebody that you would see in pretty much every movie in the 80s where there's a detective. The young, handsome guy, grizzly old man. So it works out perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they both fit the roles just perfect. In the next shot, Taggart punches Axel, and then he gets called into the office by a superior, and then he has to come out and apologize to Axel, and then the lieutenant's like, would you like to press charges? Foley's like, what? From where I come from, cops don't press charges against other cops. No, he's fine. And then the lieutenant tells him that he spoke to his boss, and he told me to tell you that if you're here investigating the Tandino case, you can stay on vacation, and he's going to press charges against you and fire you. JD, what do you think of this scene?
That's kind of rough. That's like, I mean, but at the same time, Axel Foley was warned. He was told, don't do this. Stay away from this. There's actual detectives in homicide that are investigating this. But I think that's what makes, you know, Foley such a dynamic character, is he's kind of like, he's a wild card.
Total wild card.
and he knows that what he can offer to this case is better than all of the Detroit PD, obviously better than Beverly Hills PD. I mean, these guys are just like wankers, are they not?
Yep. No, I agree. That's such a white word, though. Calling him a wanker.
George, is that, I think it's a Canadian word. Canadians are more white than us Southerners.
I don't know if you could consider us Southerners, but I'll take it.
Yeah, well, compared to Canada.
You're in Illinois.
We're talking about Canada. Come on, you wankers.
We're definitely south of Canada, for sure.
Oh, gosh. All right, so Axel is up to more tricks in the next scene. He orders a bunch of food and has it delivered to Rosewood and Taggart, who are tailing him outside. And Rosewood's like, how the heck did he know we were here? And Taggart's like, it's because I let you drive, you idiot. And then Axel goes behind the car and stuffs it with a few bananas and then jumps into the car, takes off, waves, and him and Jenny take off to the docks. I thought this was smooth as heck. I had never heard of the banana in the tailpipe trick here, George. Are you familiar with that at all?
Oh, yes. The banana in the tailpipe is definitely legit. So if you got young kids listening, definitely don't try that at home.
No.
But you did miss something with the whole banana in the tailpipe thing. Did you not notice the young Damon Wayans handing him the bananas as he was working?
Oh, my gosh.
That was Damon Wayans, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, that was.
Nice catch, man. I have to go back and see that now.
Damn. Also, is banana in the tailpipe not like a surefire way to avoid pregnancy?
It sounds really gay when someone says it. It definitely sounds very gay. But
Axel and Jenny see two guys unpacking some pallets in this warehouse, and it looks to be some type of like bond. Not sure what they are yet. We'll find out. They're kind of pulling them out of the crate, so they load them up, they take off, and Axel chases after them. Jenny won't let him drive the car, though, because she's seen his vehicle. Back at the precinct, the lieutenant can't believe that they didn't see a man stuffing a banana in the tailpipe. And then we cut back to Jenny and Axel, who arrive at a bonding warehouse, and he tells her to stay in the car and go home, and then he walks in, scales a fence, and then let's listen to a clip here of Axel busting the balls of these two doofuses working inside the bonding warehouse.
How you doing? You come in for a second, please? Hi, do you have a match?
There's no smoking in here.
I'm not going to smoke. No, I'm going to smoke when I go outside. Thank you very much. Thank you. Is your supervisor here?
Yeah, he's in the office.
Can you go get him for me, please?
What's the problem?
Are you security here?
Yeah.
Then you're the fucking problem. Go get your supervisor, please. Now!
Hey. Well. He didn't come back yet.
What do we do now?
We wait.
Okay.
Can I help you?
Are you the supervisor here?
Yes, who are you?
I'm Inspector Rafferty, United States Customs Service. Has all this stuff passed through customs already?
No, this is the bonded area.
Well, then tell me something. Ask a question for me. How can a black man, dressed like me, just march into your warehouse, walk into the bonded area, start poking around without anyone asking me any questions whatsoever?
Well, I don't know.
Well, thank you. That's the answer I was looking for. Why don't you guys just give me your ID numbers, because somebody's going to lose their job behind this. This guy gave me a match, for Christ's sake.
You gave him a match?
Listen to me. I do security checks all over the nation. And with the exception of Cleveland, this place has the worst security in the nation. Now, I suggest you guys call your wives, because we're going to be here all night. We're going to check the background of each and every crate in this section, starting with this one right here.
JD, what do you think of this whole sequence here? I love all the cuts back and forth of Rosewood and just asking these asinine questions to Taggart.
It is another like great and prime example of flipping the script and putting people into situations that is opposite of their characters. Like now, again, we have Rosewood and Axel Foley and Taggart. Like everything about who they are is sort of flipped on its head for them to be interrogating essentially somebody that's in authority but they're doing so from a deviant manner. So from a writing standpoint, you always have to think of opportunities when you can take your characters and you can put them in a situation that not only goes against the grain of who they are, but does so in a way that brings more development to their overall character.
So we cut to Axel jumping into the back of the car and scaring the crap out of Rosewood and Taggart. Axel tells the guys that the three of them should just work together, man. You guys, come out, man. Come get a drink with me. And they're kind of resistant, but they end up going. So we cut to what he says is going to be the perfect place, which ends up being a strip club. Rosewood's looking around like, I swear, he's got a look on his face that looks like he's seeing a naked body for the first time in his life. It's awesome. And then Axel says, hey, Billy, you don't have to be shy, man. If your dick gets hard, it's supposed to get hard. It's all right. And then at the club, we see a couple of bad-looking dudes walking around. They're in these long jackets, and they're just kind of watching what's going on. And Axel notices them right away. And he's like, hey, Taggart, it's June. Don't you think it's a little hot for a long black jacket in the summer? Taggart's like, yeah, I guess. And he tells him, I want you to go check out the guy over there. I'm going to go check on this guy over at the bar. And then he gets up and just acts all drunk and acts like he knows this guy. And then he ends up stopping the shooting of what I would suppose was going to be a burglary, some type of robbery. George, what do you think of this scene?
It's one of the standout scenes in the movie for me personally. And just a quick kind of sidetrack, you know, up until this point, the score of this movie is just fantastic. Yes. And it just made me just kind of remember of, that's one of the things that I forgot about this movie, about how good the music was, even the music that they were playing in the strip clubs. And it made me think, like, you know, what are some of my favorite, like, 80s tunes? Mm-hmm. I know if I had to pick, like, a song from the 80s, I know what mine would be, but do you guys have like a favorite song from the 80s, like, oof, that you would just say, this is the best song or my favorite song from the 80s?
I'm going to go ahead and jump right in and say, we built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
Oh gosh. That's there a good go, one. Man. That's a good one there. I might have to go with some Journey. Don't Stop Believing.
If you don't sing it, it doesn't count, Kyle. Come on.
Don't stop believing.
No, I've stopped believing. Stop singing.
Okay, yeah. I'll cut. You think I should get my money back?
If I didn't get my money back, you're not getting yours back.
So Axel stands up for Taggart and Rosewood in the next scene, and he tells them that they did nothing wrong, and they were super cops out there, man. They should have capes on. It's the only thing missing. They stopped the whole robbery. And then Taggart is asked what really happened, and he comes clean to the captain and fully leaves. And before he goes, I just want you to know that that lie was working perfectly before you guys fucked it up. And he takes off, and then the captain takes the two off the case and assigns two other guys to tail Foley. So the next day, he pulls the same trick. This time he sends coffee and donuts. And then Axel makes fun of the way the new detective talks and says he's been hanging out with the white dude too long. And then Axel's at Victor's house, and he invites them to grab something to eat. When he sees a car leave the residence, he takes off, follows the car, and he loses the guys tailing them at the stoplight by just waiting until the light hit red and then just gunning it right through the intersection. Brilliant. So we're inside the country club, and Axel throws one of the goons across the table. JD, we got to talk about this goon real quick, though, man, because he's the one that kills Mikey. He's, dare I say, maybe one of your favorite characters from a show we both love, Breaking Bad. Would you like to talk about Jonathan Banks?
Mr. Ehrmantraut.
Yo, yeah, bitch.
I don't do a good.
That's it, no, that's, good. That was pretty good.
It was good? Okay. It blew my mind when I first saw Jonathan Banks walk into the scene earlier on, and I wish that we had brought it up earlier, but I was like, that looks like a young Jonathan Banks. That looks like a young Mike. And I looked it up and I was like, oh my gosh, everything from his deadpan stare to his just double tap in the back of the head.
Yep.
Fantastic.
What do you think of the back and forth between Axel and Victor?
It's good. I mean, you have to think of it from a standpoint of, you know, writing and directing and acting, and the triangle between the three is fantastic.
So Axel is back at the precinct and he's met by the lieutenant, and he tells him about his friend Mikey, that he believes he was killed by Victor, and he tells them art isn't the only thing Victor deals. He found a crate that had German bear bonds. And he says, my friend Michael had these bonds on him when he was killed. I should say Mikey, not Michael. And he says he's not an investor, he's a smuggler. He says he's paying someone to move the drugs, and he didn't find drugs, but he found coffee grounds. And the lieutenant's like, yeah, that's what they use to hide the scent. It doesn't get picked up. But because he didn't find the drugs, they can't get a warrant. So he puts Taggart on the case, and Axel's like, man, that's a bad idea. They're going to catch wind of him. They're going to take off and just move their operation elsewhere. And then a higher power comes out. I believe this is the chief, who pulls the lieutenant into the room for a nice little ass chewing. And then he comes back out and tells Rosewood to take Foley back to the hotel, watch him pack, and escort him to the city limits. The chief says, if you come back in this town, they're going to prosecute you to the limit of the law. George, what do you think of this scene? I thought this was going to go another way, and then it flipped the script.
I thought it was going to go another way, too, because the way he was talking to Axel Foley, it sounded like he was impressed. Like, you're the guy who did that? You're the guy that did this? And I'm like, okay. And then he kind of flips it, and he's like, no, get the hell out. I'm like, oh, okay. That I didn't see that going that way.
Yeah.
But I think it was definitely a perfect setup for what's going to happen next.
Yeah, and next, Jenny is actually met by Victor at the art store, and he questions her about Foley, and he wants to know how she knows him, and she kind of spills the beans a little bit, but she doesn't give away too much of why he's here and how much interaction they've had. Victor gets the information and leaves, and you can see Jenny looks really worried, so we cut to Rosewood and Foley. And Foley is convincing Rosewood to help him out. And Axel's like, man, I love you. You just became my new favorite person. So they arrive at the art store with Jenny and Serge. And Jenny tells him that she's coming with him to the warehouse. So Axel tells Rosewood to sit tight. And they're outside. And he's like, man, you can't go inside. You're a cop in this town. If they see you, it's an illegal search. Stay in the car. So Jenny and Axel enter the warehouse. And inside, they see the crates. And he can tell that somebody's already been in there. It busted open. He finds the coffee grinds. And then he pulls out a huge bag of Coke. He says, this ain't sugar. And just as he tastes it, he gets two guns pulled on him and Jenny. And then Victor arrives. He's pretty pissed here. He's yelling at Jenny. He has her taken out and put into the car outside. And then Axel threatens Victor. And he says, if you do anything to her. Victor's like, ah, that would be a neat trick, because you're about to get killed. So Axel finds out who killed his buddy, and we know it's Zach now, and it's the guy that he threw over the table at the country club. And Victor walks out with Zach, and Axel's still inside with a couple guns pulled on him. And Rosewood's like, I don't know if I should go. He gets out of his car, gets back in, and he finally gets out. When he makes his way inside, he can hear and then see Axel kind of getting beat up by these guys, punching him in the stomach. Rosewood yells, freeze, and shoots one of the guys right in the heart. And then Axel knocks out the other two and they take off. But man, Rosewood to the safe here. I didn't think he had it in him. JD, what'd you think of this whole scene?
So obviously Judge Reinhold is very Judge Reinhold-y throughout this entire movie. Like, you can see a lot of his actor choices that leads to him being Neil in the Santa Claus.
In our archives.
Ooh, shameless plug.
Yep.
But it's, I don't know, like, it's good, and I love the progression that they do with these actors and the characters. They make choices, put them in situations that are against their better judgment, and they force the characters to sort of come up with a new plan that goes against their personalities. Like, if there's any lesson to be learned, like, you have to put your characters in a place that goes against what they anticipate, and make them decide to do something different. And that's the spice of life. I mean, like, that's what makes the world go around. That's the American dream, is it not?
For sure. No, that's a great point. So we are racing to the finish line here. So Taggart and Billy talk on the radio. He tells Taggart to check out the warehouse, and whatever you do, don't tell Bogo Mill. Don't want to lose my job. So next, Foley is breaking into a gated area. It looks like he's outside of Victor's house. When Taggart shows up, Foley tells Taggart if he wants to stop him, he's going to have to shoot him because he's going inside to get his friend. And Rosewood's like, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm a big boy now in my big boy pants. He didn't really say that, but that's how he acts. And it's a big moment by Rosewood. He's finally getting a backbone, and Taggart's going to back him up. So he runs to his car, grabs a shotgun, and he joins them. Inside the property, they're getting picked up by the camera system, making their way throughout the yard, trying to get to the house. Victor says Foley's on the grounds, and he orders someone to get over to him right away. So Taggart and Rosewood go left. Foley goes up to the house onto the main lawn. And back at the precinct, Bogo Mill is searching for Taggart. So he tracks his car, and he finds out it's at Victor's house, so he calls everybody to that location, starts putting on his vest, and he's going to join them. We have our first real action shot here of Taggart and Foley getting shot at here by a machine gun. Rosewood finally shoots down one of the goons with the gun, and everybody turns and looks at them like, damn, nice job, Rosewood. And then Foley guns down another machine gun holding guy in the next scene as they inch closer to the house. Rosewood tries to get them to stop by just yelling, police, you're under arrest. But they just start shooting at him, and Taggart's like, if you do that again, I'm going to shoot you myself. So Foley's made it inside, and he's met by Zach, and they're in a shootout inside the house. Foley guns him down in the next scene with a shot to the heart. Goodbye to the great Jonathan Banks. We'll see you in about 20 years in Breaking Bad. Great show. As he's gunned down Zach here, Axel gets shot in the arm by Victor, but he's able to get back to his feet and get out. And we see the police have arrived here in fashion, just driving right through the gates. We have a giant cop car pile up outside as they chase down this van. And then inside, with the help of Bogo Mill, they gun down Victor. So outside, Rosewood again yells, police, you're under arrest. Take two steps back with your hands up. And this time they actually listen. And Taggart's like, damn, that was pretty good. I thought this was a pretty good scene. George, what do you think of this, the end of Victor and Zach and getting taken down by the guys here?
So that first, to start when they were outside, right? That whole scene with the machine guns and them getting shot at, it was very A-team. It definitely reminded me of the A-team of, you know, shooting 100 rounds and nobody gets hit. So it was like, okay, we're going to go full A-team right there. All right, that works. And then they get into the house. And, you know, his shootout with Zach was very good. It was very fun to watch, and it was just really cool to look at. Even his scene with Victor. I think the guy who plays Victor in this movie, I think he does an excellent job at being the exact opposite of Axel Foley. Because Axel Foley is quick talking, quick moving, and everything he does in this movie is very methodical, very slow. And every time he speaks to Axel Foley, he doesn't say a lot of words, but they're always like straight to the point. And it's like, it's a perfect balance out, because if he spoke just like Axel Foley, it would almost be too much. So it was perfect the way he delivered his dialogue.
Oh, that's great points. Now, let's listen to Bogo Mill coming to the rescue of Foley here with the chief.
I'm glad to hear it.
Well, sir, Miss Jeanette Summers, the manager of Mr. Maitland's art gallery, accidentally discovered large quantities of a substance she suspected was cocaine in the art gallery's warehouse. She immediately communicated her discovery to Detective Axel Foley of the Detroit Police Force. Detective Foley was at the time cooperating in a joint Beverly Hills, Detroit investigation of narcotics trafficking. Detectives Foley and Rosewood, responding to Miss Summers' report, proceeded to the warehouse, where Rosewood did in fact discover approximately 80 kilos of cocaine. Rosewood immediately called for backup, and I dispatched our officers to this location. Sergeant Taggart here was the first to arrive at the scene. And having probable cause to believe a felony was in progress, Sergeant Taggart joined Rosewood, with Detective Foley present only as an observer, and proceeded to enter the grounds. And in the course of defending ourselves, we shot several suspects, including Mr. Maitland.
You expect me to believe that report?
That's the report I'm filing, sir.
Sergeant Taggart, why don't you tell me what happened?
Happened just like the lieutenant said, Chief.
JD, what'd you think of this? I did not see this coming. I thought Bogomil would throw him under the bus.
If that's not the reoccurring theme of this movie, that you did not see it coming, because it's always the fish out of water, it's the dramatic irony, it's the putting our characters in a situation where you expect one thing and you pull the rug out and you deliver something else.
Yeah.
And I think that's to me, like, that's what stands out about this movie, even from when I was young when I saw this to rewatching it now. It was just kind of like, you expect everything to go one way, but it's all just a juxtaposition to take it a different direction. And it's fantastic from the writing to the directing to the acting. Everything in that triangle just sort of, it's the 1-2 punch.
Yeah, it's a great scene. I love it. Next, the chief leaves and Foley says, "Hey, Captain, you were lying your ass off." And then starts doing his laugh. Bogomil tells him to get checked out, and he's like, "You need to get that shoulder looked at." And then he tells Foley that he will call his boss Todd tomorrow and smooth things over. So the next day, Axel is checking out of the hotel. So Taggart drops by with Rosewood, and he picks up the tab on the hotel room. He says the Beverly Hills Police Department's going to pick this up. And Axel's like, "Man, y'all are just too kind. How much are those robes?" $95. "Let me get two of them." And then he gives one to Taggart, and he gives one to Billy, which I thought was really cool. And then Taggart's like, "I don't need it." He's like, "No, listen, I got three of them already. You want one of these things?" And then Axel tells him that he's thinking about stopping off for a beer before he leaves town. And Taggart's like, "Yeah, I kind of figured that." And Rosewood's like, "Well, we really can't. You know, we're still on the job." And Taggart's like, "Come on, man. One beer won't kill you." So Axel jumps in the car and tells them that he knows the perfect place. Cracks a smile and the credits roll. George, what do you think of the ending of the movie here?
I thought it was the perfect ending. And I thought it was a perfect way, because you just kind of assume that they're going to go to the strip club. And I think actually in this movie, that's when everything turns for Taggart and Rosewood. The first time they're in that strip club, you learn a lot about the characters from that scene.
Yep, absolutely. And I mean, JD, let's talk a little bit. I mean, the movie's 35 years old now, which, man, doesn't seem like it's that old, but it is. How do you feel like Beverly Hills has held up all these years?
I personally think it has gotten better with age, especially when you look and compare it to a lot of the comedians that are in films now. Kevin Hart has come up. I look at everything that The Rock is doing. But Eddie Murphy was sort of that corner piece of both action and comedy way back in 1984. And I'm going to shamelessly plug again. We talked about 48 Hours, The Golden Child. I mean, everything he did in the 80s was just like groundbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this film is a well-told story that's very tight. There's not many plot holes to be had. You can complain about things here and there, but it takes a Detroit detective throws him into Beverly Hills. He's surrounded by white people. So like the comedy and the irony and everything about the story is sort of still relevant today.
No, I agree. I feel like if you just updated the technology and the cars, this movie could play just fine today. It would be a huge hit. I'm actually a little surprised they're not doing Beverly Hills Cop 4 instead of Coming to America 2.
It I feel like that would be a much docket. Better movie. No, it's on the docket.
I know, but yeah. If that Coming to America flops, they're never going to make it. So everything depends on that movie.
I'm with you. I would rather see Beverly Hills Cop 4 than Coming to America. T-O-O.
Yep. You guys also didn't mention that not only is he going to do that, but Eddie Murphy's slated to be in Triplets, the sequel to Twins.
Oh, dear God.
So that Eddie Murphy, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Danny DeVito.
I do love Danny DeVito, though. Oh, he's so great in Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Charlie! Gosh, great. Plus, we're going to talk about him pretty soon, because we've got Batman Returns on the docket. So we're going to get to talk some Danny DeVito as the Penguin. Might be my favorite Danny DeVito movie of all time. I'm looking forward to it. But George, man, thanks for coming on the show again. You were great in Home Alone. You were awesome in here, bringing up the music. You know, obviously you had a lot of interesting facts on the movie. What do you got going on, man? Anything you want to plug or social media?
You know what? I definitely have an idea for you guys for a future episode. So there's a guy in my mind that you guys haven't done any of his movies. And if you want to talk about from probably like 1982 to 1996, one of the biggest stars was Steve Guttenberg. And I think you guys have done a Steve Guttenberg movie.
We have not touched Steve Guttenberg. On the blog we have, if you check out the top toys based on movies, Police Academy toys are included.
Okay.
But we have not touched Steve Guttenberg yet. You are correct.
I mean, he did Diner, Cocoon, Short Circuit, Three Men and a Baby, Police Academy. I mean, The Big Green was even a pretty decent movie.
Big Green.
I mean, he's got some, like, for a while, he was really on a roll there. And then it's like his career went from A-list to absolutely nowhere.
Can I just that I didn't even think, out of all the names I thought you were going to mention there, I would have never guessed Steve Guttenberg.
You know, I listened to a few podcasts who specialize in like 80s and 90s movies, and no one ever brings up Steve Guttenberg. But he was a pretty big star for like throughout the 80s and the 90s. He was a really big deal.
Yeah, no, I agree. No, Short Circuit, Police Academy, Three Men and a Baby, like, they're all going to happen at some point. They got to win a vote. We'll probably put out a poll. Maybe we'll do a Steve Guttenberg poll. That might be a good idea.
Guten Tag, Steve Guttenberg.
There you go.
There you go, man.
Awesome. Well, again, yeah, man, thanks for coming on the show. As always, make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, CastBox, Spotify, YouTube. Check out JD's blog at backintimepod.com. And you can follow us on social media at backintimepod, Twitter, Instagram. We're on Facebook. Yeah, make sure you drop us a 5-star review while you're there. I'm at KAutry29, JD's at UnjustJustin, and we are out of time. Time to get back into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Bev, Beverly Hills Cop, Beverly Hills Cop, Axel Foley gonna catch the bad guy.